Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hello and welcome once again to Connecting Faith. An important hour ahead, and I am so thankful that you tuned in today. I hope that you can stick around for the hour. Just a quick reminder, of course, if you miss any part of this program or any of the others, Connecting Faith programs, you can always catch the podcasts online. You can also share them with a friend. They're easily shareable. Go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. You can see the podcast archives there. And I'd love to be able to just let this be a resource for you to pass on to a friend or loved one, someone that needs the conversation. By the way, when you're online, take a moment to sign your pastor up, your ministry leader, for our Pastor Appreciation Giveaway, October Clergy and Pastor Appreciation Month. And thanks to Sunscapes Retreats, we have a great opportunity where we can send a pastor and a spouse on a week retreat at a great location, either in, I think, Tennessee or Colorado, just on kind of the backside of Pikes Peak. So you can actually see the peak. I mean, it's not like the backside, it's sort of the backside of the moon where it's all dark. No, it's actually up in Divide, Colorado. It's a great spot. So anyway, we'd like to be able to do that to a pastor that's nominated. And so your part is to make that nomination, send us a note or two about what you appreciate about your pastor. And maybe your pastor has had a special concern for those that are going through difficult circumstances, perhaps in the area of domestic violence. And that is going to be our topic today. We are thankful to welcome back Justin Holcomb to the broadcast. Yeah, who has written, he and his wife, Lindsay, just have a special heart for those that are in abusive situations or are getting out of that and just have written helpful books on that. We're going to talk about them. In fact, we've got a couple to give away. Should mention, too, that we'd love to have you join the broadcast, and you're welcome to be anonymous. Maybe you have a friend or family member you think might be in an abusive situation, and you'd just like to get some advice on what you can do, how you can help, or maybe you come through something like that, and you can just give testimony to some of the hope that you found, maybe through other believers, or maybe it was particular psalms that encouraged you, whatever it might be. We'd like to hear your story. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. And this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, Ted, so it's, and I know... Ted, your wife is in a counseling situation. I'm sure she encounters. I mean, this is all too common.
It really is. She's a marriage and family therapist, but she does a lot of individual counseling, and she has a heart for teen girls, especially that are into cutting and things. Right now, she's actually at a conference for those that have been victims of abuse in various forms, and it's amazing the number of people that are. I mean, you cite the stat, 1 in 3.
Yeah.
And, you know, this show is going to be helpful, I think, for all of us, because chances are good that you know somebody that suffered.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get to today's program. Justin Holcomb is an Episcopal priest. He's an adjunct professor of theology and philosophy at Reformed Theological Seminary and also at Gordon-Conwell. And he's a director at Key Life. And he has written several books. He and his wife, Lindsay, have written wonderful books, including the one we're going to reference today called Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. And that came out, I think, last year from Moody. And we'll talk a little bit more about where you can find that. We do have a couple of copies of that to give away. But Justin, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this topic, especially with you. And you have great questions and great insight, and just make it make sense to the listeners. And so just doing this with you is a blast, and I'm thankful for your ministry.
Well, we do want to make it a safe place to talk today. And so I just want to encourage you, if you're listening and you are maybe in the middle of this experience or know somebody that is, we would love to just be able to interact. You'll get some great counsel and encouragement from Justin. You can call us at 877-933-2484. And at the very least, call and sign up for a drawing for, we got 3 copies of the book, Isn't My Fault, Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. Justin, one of the things that you address in the book is that people don't always know if they're victims of abuse. How can that be?
Well, one reason is because the way many people think about abuse is that it's physical, that it has to be only physical and really intense and likely requires a hospital visit. So when most people think of domestic abuse, I mean, the images are black eyes, bloody noses, and an ambulance. And abuse takes numerous forms. It can take the form of sexual abuse. It's very possible for a married couple to actually encounter sexual abuse within marriage, economic, verbal, spiritual, and emotional. So we need to have a broader definition of domestic abuse that's beyond just physical violence. There's hands-on violence and then what people have called hands-off violence. You can making threats I've heard numerous women who have told stories and sometimes men too. I mean, it's not just women. Predominantly it is women, but men do suffer domestic abuse also. But a person whose spouse or ex-husband or fiance or, you know, if they're cohabitating, I mean, any type of intimate relationship where their partner or spouse is, you know, throwing stuff toward them, on purpose not hitting them, but threatening them with the hint of, hey, this could be you next time, or actually threatening, you know, if you ever leave me, I'll take care of things. I mean, there's numerous ways that this can take place. And so the first thing we did in our book was we went through and answered a question that we hear is, you know, am I in an abusive relationship? And we went through and explained there's two tracks to think about. What type of behavior and words and interaction is your partner doing? What are they doing? What type of behavior or contact are they having? And then how do you feel around them? Do you feel threatened and anxious, or do you actually feel cared for and loved? And if they are doing certain behaviors, whether or not you feel anxious around it or not, that's a key thing. We give them a checklist. And then another one that's actually more powerful for the people you're referring to is asking them how they feel around their partner. And we, you know, we go through a checklist. It's not just kind of like, oh, you know, I feel frustrated. It's like, no. Do you feel anxious? Do you feel afraid? Do you walk on eggshells? Or do you feel threatened? Do you feel intimidated? And a lot of people who are in abusive relationships, when they go through and actually explore how they feel, they realize, wait a second, I do feel this way. Is there a reason I feel this way? And then they realize, yes, because they're doing these things. I should feel that way. And it connects the dots for them. And because most people, the reason this can happen is because most people don't want to even think that they're actually in an abusive relationship. This is a person that they, for the most part, in most instances, have chosen to be with. And it just doesn't fit their picture of their vision of what reality was supposed to look like. So it's disheartening. It's discouraging to explore that type of thing. So it's easier to deny or minimize the reality.
I was just thinking, even as I was, you know, preparing for the program, that just the whole, even just the phrase domestic violence, how sad is that? That, I mean, this is something that's happening, you know, in the homes, in these, as you say, intimate relationships. It's not right, is it?
That's why it stings so much. That's the pain point. That's why there's so much shame, because this is someone with whom they're supposed to have a flourishing relationship. This person's supposed to love them. And so when they start, you know, they think that if they tell other people, yeah, my husband or fiance is abusive toward me, that actually is somehow their deficiency, that there's something to be ashamed of, like they did something wrong, because, you know, the relationship is falling apart. It's an abusive relationship. And if they've stayed beyond one or two episodes of abuse, then they feel ridiculous for staying. And then the fact that this is someone that's the closest person in the world to them that is causing the pain. There's a psalm about this, Psalm 55. David talks about his friend, and it's a male friend, and it's just a friendship. It's not an intimate partner relationship type of thing. But he talks about many of the psalms is David talking about you know, his enemies. They're you know, just, you know, they're people he doesn't really know, just these people who are trying to kill him in general. But in Psalm 55, he talks about how the pain of betrayal from a friend is even more painful and how deeply it stings. And so Psalm 55 captures very well the emotions of someone who's in an abusive relationship with an intimate partner, that it does sting differently than, you know, some random stranger saying those words to you. This is someone who committed and made vows and said on purpose that they wanted to to do life with you, and that person is a destructive force. It is. It can be devastating.
You say right at the outset, as the title suggests, "Is it my fault?" And you answer emphatically, "No." Talk about maybe just to reaffirm that again. That no matter what the circumstances, situation. I mean, there's no excuse.
The reason we titled that is because that's the main question people suffering domestic abuse are feeling. Is it my fault? Like, did I, and it's numerous ways, you know, did I pick the wrong person? Should I have known better? Well, actually, most people didn't really have much of an idea when they were getting married to this person or dating this person that they would do this. I mean, there weren't a lot of indicators, but many people think, well, I should have known better. Some people think, well, maybe it's because I've done something in my past. Maybe it's because I had premarital sex. I've heard that one. It's because I had an abortion when I was 17. I've heard that one. Or there's something I've done and God is getting me back. Other people think, well, maybe it's because I'm not a good wife or mother or, you know, daughter or sibling or whatever. I'm not doing something now and God is getting me. Or, I mean, there's numerous ways, and most people suffering domestic abuse assume that it's their fault. The perpetrator tells them, the abuser basically says, you know, clearly and by their actions, well, I'm only doing this because you're making me do it. You're to blame. And we live in a society that's a victim-blaming society. And because of all of that, the first question almost everyone has is, well, it must be my fault. It's not even a question. It's an assumption that it's their fault. That's why we wanted to say there's nothing you could have done or said or thought that made you deserving of abuse. You may have even sinned in how you related to your spouse, but that doesn't make you deserving of abuse. There's nothing you can do that makes you deserving of being abused, and it's not your fault. The abuse you're experiencing is not your fault. The main question isn't why do you stay, or something worse, why. You know, what did you do to make this happen? Or if it's that bad, you'd really leave. The main question that should be asked is why does he choose to abuse? The blame should be given to the one who is abusing, not the abused. And so if you are experiencing abuse in a relationship, there's nothing you could have done that makes you deserving of that. Karma is not how God works. He's not getting you back. This isn't your cross to bear. God actually wants you to be safe and cares about your safety and would encourage you to get safe. There's nothing godly about intentionally subjecting yourself to abuse by an intimate partner.
Wise words, needed words today from Justin Holcomb. We're talking about his latest book called Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. And we'll deal more with the hope and healing side of that. Justin is an ordained clergyman, teaches theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary, holds master's degrees, and he and his wife are also part of GRACE, which is an acronym for Godly Response to Abuse in Christian Environments. And he serves on the Council Board of the Biblical Counseling Coalition. And you can find him online at justinholcomb.com. We'll talk more in a moment. Would love to have you join the conversation. You know someone you're concerned about. Let's talk about how we can come up with some ways to intervene, help out, provide hope and healing for those that are struggling with this terrible area. This is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we'll talk more about it in a moment. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. It's 877-933-2484. Perhaps it'd be easier for you to send us a note. You can do that anonymously, go into the email by using myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. If you'd like to send us a note, be happy to hear from you, talk about your circumstance, and offer some hope and healing. 877-93-FAITH.
He is with us, always, always. He is
It's 19 past the hour, and we're talking today with Justin Holcomb. Justin and his wife, Lindsay, have co-written a wonderful new book called Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This book is from Moody Publishing, and there is opportunity for you to find out more resources. We'll talk about that in a moment. Paul Tripp, who we've had on in our broadcast in the past, talks about this book. He said it's specific, tender, concrete, compassionate, bold, understanding, wise, and died with the gorgeous gospel of grace that is ours in Christ Jesus. And that's the message we want to bring throughout today's program, that there's hope and healing, and there's grace for those that have suffered. One of the questions, I guess, Justin, is maybe we'll just jump in with that. That song bumper just kind of reminded us that God is with us all the time, but that doesn't mean that we have to stay in an abusive situation. Is that one of the most difficult parts of this is when to leave and what happens if we do leave?
Absolutely. It's the most difficult, and we know that because most women leave and go back to the abusive situation 7 to 12 times on average. So it is very common to not just leave, but to go back and then leave again. And, I mean, that's the cycle of leaving and going back, an average of 7 to 12 times. Another thing about leaving is that leaving is one of the most dangerous things that can be done because domestic abuse is about power and control. And when someone leaves, they are getting away from and out of the overbearing power and control dynamic going on, which does trigger some more anger. And so you need to be careful about leaving because it can that's when some more intense violence and even deaths can occur. And that's the big point. That's one of the most important things that we can say to someone when they come tell us. Is one, I'm worried about your safety, and then two, I believe you. Those are the two things that they need to hear. There was a study done that said, what's the most helpful thing, technique-wise, that someone can do who's you know supporting someone who's in an abusive situation? And those who are suffering abuse said the most powerful thing that can be done is for someone to listen and believe me. And literally just saying, I believe you, and I'm sorry this has happened, and I'm worried about your safety. That brings it to the forefront and letting them know. This is the thing, that domestic abuse sometimes starts with the physical, and then, you know, once something physical is done, it might not happen again because the tone's been set, the threat's been made. But sometimes it happens the other way. Sometimes it escalates up to physical violence. And once it does, it escalates more quickly to more and more violent, more intense, and more frequent on the physical violence. And it usually doesn't have a stopping point until a serious harm or death has occurred. And so making sure that person understands it is hard to leave because for numerous reasons. There's numerous reasons that we can go through whenever you'd like to on why doesn't someone leave, but there's numerous reasons why it's hard to leave. It's hard to stay away, and it's dangerous to leave, but that's one of the most important things is realizing that your safety, and if you have children, the safety of your children is at stake, and the pets. I mean, it's a volatile situation where they need a lot of help. They don't need marriage counseling at that point. They need police reports and advocacy and spiritual support. They need a team of people who are there for them to serve them.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about it, because I know you talk about safety plans, about the why and how, and so let's unpack that a little bit.
Well, the important thing, and here's the important thing for pastors and those who are in the church to hear, is that there are thousands, I think in the United States, over 2,000 domestic violence shelters, and these places are eager to help. I have almost every single woman that I've assisted in a domestic abuse situation, within the time we're meeting, if she allows, I call a domestic violence shelter, and they love it. They love it when ministers call because they know the role that church has in many people's lives as both a support in community, but also just the significance of having a whole group of people and having people who are thinking about this stuff involved. And so what we did was we made a safety plan that we made available to our publishers. It's always nice when publishers are thinking ministry, not just selling books. They actually made Appendix 2, which is called Making a Safety Plan, a PDF that's just free and floating around the internet. So if you actually do a Google search on Making a Safety Plan, you will find this. And we wanted to make it extremely easy. It goes through and says, here are some questions. What are the possible escape routes for my house? What doors, windows, or elevators or stairwells could I use? I can keep my wallet or keys handy and always keep them in a safe place, and then a blank for that place. I can keep a bag ready and put it blank so I can leave quickly. It goes through and helps someone think through all of the different things that you can do when you are threatened physically. And when you're ready to leave, it goes through another, about 10, 15 questions, ways to be safe in your own home, what kind of documents you might need if you do leave for your sake and the children's sake. And here's the thing is that most women are not choosing between paradise and being abused. Most are choosing between being in an abusive home and homelessness. There's not a lot of people. I mean, that's just the reality that one of the top reasons for homelessness for women is actually fleeing a domestic abuse situation. And if there's children involved, I know almost all of the women I know who have stayed for the sake of the children. And that, I get it. There's numerous reasons to not even want to leave. But if someone gets to the point when they're ready, there is help out there. And these, hopefully ministers can actually come alongside and be a part of that team of help. And ministers would then, realize, okay, I can't do this one alone. Let's call the domestic violence shelter. But there are tools and agencies who will advocate for you medically, legally, and emotionally. So it sounds daunting, and it is daunting. But if you are being threatened and your safety is in jeopardy and the abuse is just grinding you down and gnawing at your soul, there is hope and healing. And sometimes God does miracles, and sometimes it's more mundane. Sometimes it's that one person that you think you can trust them, and you reach out and talk to them, and sure enough, they might as well be an angel with the ministry they bring.
I just love those two lines. I'm worried about your safety, and I believe you. What a key word. And it also reminds me that we need to be supportive of our domestic violence shelters in our communities, right? I mean, those folks are really doing the Lord's work, aren't they?
Here's the thing. I've noticed that some Christians are suspicious because they deal with a women's issue, and they think, oh, they're liberal or trying to turn everyone to feminist and all this kind. I'm like, no, they don't have an agenda in the sense of trying to change your ideology. They know many of them have already been through this themselves, and they know how lonely and fearful and most women. The highest number of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, those suffering from PTSD are war vets. The second highest group are those who have been abused domestically, or domestic abuse or sexual abuse. It leads to post-traumatic stress disorder, terror, trauma, and anxiety. And women and men who are working in domestic violence shelters, almost for the most part, many of them know it firsthand, and they're trying to keep women alive. That's their goal, keeping you alive, and then move on to healing and thriving. And, if you need to leave for good, leave for good. And then what does life look like after that? And they're not out to undermine the church. They're not trying to change the ideology of, some type of radical agenda. They want to protect women who are suffering at the hands of the people who are supposed to love them.
We need to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, talk more with Justin Holcomb. So glad you tuned in today, and we'd love to have you join the conversation. You can be anonymous. Have a question, have a comment, feel free to call us at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. More in a moment.
We pour out our miseries, God just tears a melody.
Give you a safe place to cry out today, ask a question, share a comment. We talk domestic violence. October's Domestic Violence Month. We're honored to have back with us Justin Holcomb. Justin serves as a clergyman, teaches theology at Gordon-Conwell Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary, and he and his wife, Lindsay, have written several books, but this one especially recommended. We've got some copies to give away. We'd love to have you call and at least sign up for the drawing for that and pass it on to a friend, perhaps someone that you know could really use some hope and healing for those suffering domestic violence. That's the subtitle of the book, Is It My Fault? And our phone number is 877-933-2484, or you can send us an email by going to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and you're welcome to be anonymous as well. Anonymous listener in St. Paul, Justin asked this questioner, shares his comments. She says, my mom was in an abusive relationship with my dad, and now I've seen the pattern in my relationship. Are there any statistics about domestic abuse being passed down to generations?
Yes, there's studies on this. I don't have the specific numbers just because it's a little bit vague on exactly, scientifically what percentage does it work out. But it's very common to see that if a child grows up in an abusive home, they are, one, more likely to have a relationship that is also abusive because it's what they know is normal. That is what normal looks like, and they're not drawn to an abusive situation because they go, oh yeah, I saw it and it was miserable and I want to be miserable. But what happens is that they becomes normal, and there's a type of person that they are used to seeing, and that's what the relationship looks like. And then those who also have encountered it learn how to abuse. They learn how to misuse their influence and how to do the power and control thing. So both it puts the children on a trajectory to enter into relationships that are abusive and to also be abusive in relationships. So absolutely. And it's, breaking, something has to happen, that cycle. And my wife was in the home she grew up in, and this is from her account. I'm not interpreting it for her. I mean, she says this in interviews when she's available, that she grew up in a home that didn't have physical abuse, but I've had every other type of emotional, psychological, the threats, it was a toxic house to live in. And, that's what was normal for their home. She grew up as a little child, and that's all she saw. That's the kind of interaction that she saw. And so she talks about the importance of the cycle being stopped in our marriage and in our relationship and how huge that is, because going back generations in their family, that's what it was like. Same thing with my parents. Things stopped with my parents on both sides of my family. My mom and dad grew up in abusive homes, and their parents did, and their parents did. That's kind of the trajectory that the families were on. And my parents were just determined, like, that was miserable. That needs to stop. And it did. It stopped with them. So yes, to answer the question, it makes it very likely that the children will both be in an abusive relationship and abuse in relationships if they are in an abusive home.
It does seem a little disconcerting. We think about the growing number of children born without, two parents in the home. It seems like there's a lot of increase in male anger, some of those things. I mean, are we raising a generation that is more prone to this?
Yeah, there's a sociologist who I used to teach with, in the same department at the University of Virginia. His name is Brad Wilcox, and he has done research on fatherhood and cultural studies of fatherhood, and he has found that simply the presence of a father in the home changes. That is a huge indicator of the well-being of the family and of the children. Educational scores are higher. There's across the board the presence of a father. If he's not abusive, just the presence of a father. He doesn't need to be dynamic. He's not dad of the year. He doesn't even have to do very much. Literally, being present is a huge gift to the family. Now, if he's actually a loving father who doesn't provoke his children and loves his wife the way Christ loves the church, laying down his life for his wife, I mean, then you're talking about, I mean, that just launches it into, the multitude of goodness for the family. So his research, the big idea is, yes, just the presence of dad is extremely noteworthy for numerous reasons. And Benny talked about growing up in a culture with male anger. Yes, because there's a phrase called male privilege, and it's the assumption. And what happens is when males assume that they get the benefit of the doubt, that they get to call some shots, that they're really leading things. And you know, when chauvinism is systemic and male privilege is expected, when things change a little bit and their privilege is no longer, you know, they're not just assumed to be, you know, have all the wisdom and be in charge, that triggers some of their anger. And so, yes, the male anger is increasing, and it is prevalent, and that's partly due to the way that the world has been set up for us. That's the way we've talked about gender, and we expect men to, you know, be aggressive, and, you know, just the American picture of masculinity is ridiculous. And what we need more of is the Christian view of what masculinity looks like, not just taking some type of meat-headed masculinity that the world gives us, adding on some Bible verses and saying, oh yeah, you want to be a real biblical man, eat red meat and talk about sex a lot. It's like, no, that's just the meat-headed American version. How about laying down your life for your wife and children? How about not trying to be the biggest guy in the room who's the most accomplished? You know, let's look at Christ and what leadership looks like, and take our cues from that, not from, you know, the American male hero picture. We need less of that in the church and more of something else that would be a lot more radical.
I want to talk a little bit about how, you know, churches can maybe better counsel and support and those victims of domestic violence. But it made me wonder, are there warning signs for a potential abuser? I mean, I think people listening today say, you know, I think my sister's in a relationship I'm not sure about, or, you know, are there signs that we can pick up? And how do we help maybe our teens and young adults as they get into dating situations to not get caught in this kind of cycle?
Well, I'll start with the second question. One of the best things you can do with the children is love them well. So that's normal. And if someone doesn't love them well, if they're not being cared for in the way that you know they're used to, that will send off all the red flags. Like, wait a second, my dad never talks to me like that. That's one of the things I'm very aware of. I have two little girls, 4 and 6. And, you know, sometimes I'm tired and I'm cranky and I'm a sinner. And so I get frustrated and impatient, and sometimes I snap at my little girls. And it strikes me, wait a second, I don't want to remind my wife of what it was like growing up, but also I don't want that to be normal. So one of the most frequent things in apologies that I say to my girls is, you know, Sophia, Grace, Zoe, Daddy was wrong. Daddy sinned. I should not talk to you like that. I should be gentle and patient and not do that because I'm cranky and because I want it my way. Will you please forgive me? That's not good. You need to be talked to with respect and love and dignity. And they go, yes. Well, I'm trying to make both. I'm trying to just to apologize to my daughters when I sin against them, but also I want them to think that that's normal. And if some boy starts dating them and he starts getting bossy and snappy and isn't humble and doesn't know how to apologize and repent, they're going to hopefully think that he's crazy and think that's not what love looks like. That's not love. That's something else. And I don't want any of that. So that's one way. But the other thing is looking for some of the subtle cues. So when you're talking about are there any hints on this? Yes. Belittling behavior is an amazing. So when you're out, and it's, you know, sometimes some couples can be playful and snarky, and they both got thick skin. But there's that point where it turns into condescension and belittling. The glares. Those are certain things because most abusers aren't going. They don't harm the other person when there's people around. They usually don't start, you know, verbally abusing them or emotionally abusing them when there's witnesses around. They do it at other times. But their quest for power and control is not hidden. It's just under the radar a little bit. So look for the belittling behavior, the condescension, the glares, the kind of the controller who is hypercritical about their spouse, undermines them, tries to make them look ridiculous, is kind of objectifies their spouse, you know, turns them into, you know, sexual objects or, you know, something like that. I mean, there are not so subtle hints that you can see in other people's relationships.
Let's take a call. We have a break coming up, but anonymous caller wants to talk about domestic abuse toward men. Go ahead.
How are you today?
Hello, great.
Say, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I appreciate your mission, and I wanted to suggest that a domestic problem is not limited only to women, but also to same-sex relationships, the mentally retarded, the elderly, the adolescent, and men themselves. But it seems like the focus is strictly on women, and the bad guy, you might say, is always a man, be it either a significant other or a husband.
Let's talk about it. Go ahead.
I did mention that at the beginning of the interview, that 1 in 20 victims of domestic abuse are men. And while we're writing a book, we were writing it to domestic violence victims, and so we knew that most of them would be women. And we did say in the book clearly, hey, some men are going to be reading this, and there's an added level of shame, and there is hope and healing in this book. So just, you know, we wrote this assuming that most of the people reading it would be women who are victims. So if that's not you, we understand. And I completely agree. A lot of one added dimension in same-sex partnerships is that the threat to out them is an added threat, and it does happen in same-sex relationships. It happens in dating relationships. It happens in, you know, after divorce. And so when we're talking about intimate partner abuse, we're talking about any form of intimate partnerships. It can be dating, cohabitation, marriage, ex, same-sex, you know, opposite-sex relationships. So we didn't talk about – we're not – it's not a – you know, while we care about it, we just didn't write a book for those abused in general, elder abuse, which is a huge issue, child abuse, which is kind of connected to domestic abuse. But we were writing to those who are suffering abuse and intimate partner relationships. And, you know, Stephen Tracy has written a lot of great work on healing from abuse. And he talks about abuse in general, where all of those others would definitely key in. And the reason we talk about men is because most of the abusers are men. And I know a lot of people don't like that. I'm not male bashing. It's just reality that most of the people who are abusers in a domestic abuse situation are men. Now, yes, some are women who are in same-sex relationships. Some are women who are in heterosexual relationships. But for the most part, it is the man. Now, there was one gentleman who strong, big, muscular, athlete. He didn't think that he was experiencing domestic abuse until he got stabbed in the ribs and went to the hospital. And the doctor and the nurse said, you know, what in the world happened? Is this, you know, what's the relationship like? And when he described his relationship, he was describing an abusive relationship. And they told him, sir, you're in an abusive relationship. He ended up getting out, going to a shelter, and getting safe. And so, yes, that absolutely does happen. That's just not the norm. It's not the dominant way that people experience domestic abuse. So, but absolutely want to be clear that men aren't always the perpetrators and are also sometimes the victims.
We're going to address a call about forgiveness coming up in a minute, but we'll take a quick break and then talk more with Justin Holcomb, who is an ordained clergyman that teaches theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary, and has written several books, including Rid of My Disgrace, Hope and Healing for Victims of Sexual Assault, and the latest he co-wrote with his wife, Lindsay, Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. And we'll take your calls, your comments at 877-933-2484. We do have three copies of the book to give away. I encourage you to call and to sign up for the drawing for that. And we'll continue with Justin in just a moment. spending some time today in the middle of October during Domestic Violence Awareness Month talking about domestic violence and particularly the hope and healing for those suffering from this abuse. Is It My Fault is the title of a book from Justin Holcomb. Justin and Lindsay have written that. It's published by Moody Publishing. Justin is an Episcopal priest, adjunct professor of theology and philosophy at Reformed Theological Seminary in Gordon-Conwell. He's also director at Key Life. And we do want to touch on the hope and healing of that before our time is done. But I want to take a call from Nicole, who's calling in with a question about forgiveness. Nicole, go ahead. You're on with Justin Holcomb.
Thank you. My question was about severing relationships, and I know it's about the program's about intimate relationships. My question's more about my parents. I grew up in a very abusive home from my mother and my stepfather, as well as my father. And now as an adult, I'm married to a wonderful man and have three great kids. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, the abuse, limited relationship with my mom, it resulted in abuse of my daughter. And then a few things after that, my husband and I decided to sever the relationship with them. And I'm wondering if that was an unbiblical thing that I've done. If I, I hope that they become saved today, and I pray for them and I wish them well. I don't want to have any contact with them, and I'm wondering if that's a sin, and how to tell my children about that.
Yeah, well, you're. We'll just get really personal with a few, you know, thousand people listening to us. My wife and I had to make a similar decision with a family member, and on my wife's side of the family, where the interaction is so toxic and emotionally volatile and self-centered that we just had to make a choice. And I think that it sounds like your situation is even more intense than what my wife and I were experiencing. So. If there was, you grew up in an abusive situation, you wanted to protect, it sounds like you were doing this to protect your family, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
getting safe, and it doesn't sound like, I don't hear, and I, you know, it's only been a minute, but I don't hear self-righteous, self-centered tone in your voice where you're, you know, you think you're better and you're just getting away from them. It sounds like for safety reasons, that's why you got away. And the Bible talks about this. We talk about this in the book for women, but this applies to you, even though it's not a domestic violence situation that you're wrestling with. But there's nothing ungodly with getting out of a toxic, abusive type of relationship. That, you know, Jesus and the Apostle Paul and David, all, if they could avoid suffering, they did, and they were godly for it. Many people think that if I avoid suffering, somehow I'm picking the JV version of godliness and not doing the varsity version where I'm, you know, I'm really taking up my cross. There's, yes, life has suffering, and when you're persecuted, when you suffer, you know, standing firm is a great thing. But if you can avoid abusive interactions, that is a good thing because it protects you and your child. And when it comes down to forgiveness, I mean, forgiveness is a miracle, and we're commanded to forgive. And the way that we actually do forgive, we learn in Scripture, is by being aware of the wealth of God's forgiveness for us, that He's forgiven us of so much that's the fuel for us to turn to others who have sinned against us and say, I can forgive you. We can't muster forgiveness. You can't conjure forgiveness. You know, forgiveness for one sinner to want to forgive another, that's a miracle, and that's the miracle that the Holy Spirit does in us. You know, Philippians 2:13 says that God works in us to will and do His good pleasure. And His good pleasure is that we forgive for numerous reasons. It glorifies Him. He commanded it, but it's also good for us. There's numerous reasons why we forgive. You know, unforgiveness turns into bitterness, and as I don't know who said it, but it sure is wise. You know, bitterness is drinking poison and hoping it kills your enemy, but it doesn't. I mean, you're drinking the poison. There's a ill logic to bitterness. We're bitter, and that eats at us. And so, you know, forgiving them is beneficial for us, but it's also what God has called us to do. Even if they don't ask, we can still forgive, because the fuel for that, the motivation for that comes in God's great grace that he has forgiven us. Now, forgiveness doesn't sanction what the person has done. It doesn't require that you restore the relationship back to what it was before. You can forgive someone and call the police at the same time. It doesn't mean, oh, I forgave this abusive person, so I'm going to put myself in a place where, you know, I can suffer more abuse. No, I mean, you can forgive the person and move out at the same time. That doesn't mean being unwise in how you set up your relationships, and it doesn't sanction what they did. But what it does do is it lets them off on the paybacks that you have forgiven them. And it also, when you forgive someone, you're telling them that they've done something sinful and wrong. So there's a lot going into when someone forgives somebody, and it is a miracle, but it's also a gift that God gives us.
Justin, we only have about 5 minutes left. I want to talk about maybe our pastors and churches equipped to counsel and support victims. But also, I know that the subtitle of your book is Hope and Healing for Those Suffering. I just want to give you an opportunity to communicate some hope and healing too as well. What words would you say to someone who might be in the midst of it right now?
The fear and anxiety and pain that you experience, God knows, he sees, he cares. And God's response to the pain that you're experiencing is compassion and sorrow. And if you're wondering what his response is, he's not wincing and laughing or turning away. He's not repulsed by your situation. As a matter of fact, it gets his attention, and it draws his affections toward you. So he's not doing this to you. He's not the author of evil. He's not making this happen to you, and he's not trying to get you back and pay you back. His response to you is compassion, and he is grieving what's happening to you. So you can, one, join him in his grief for the sin that you're experiencing from someone else and the pain you're experiencing. He's also angry for you. He's not just sorrowful, but he's also angry that you are suffering. And so you can also participate in that and be angry at what's happened. But he wants your safety. And ultimately, he doesn't just want your physical safety, which he cares greatly about. He also cares about your spiritual and emotional safety. He wants you to know that unconditional love is what he gives. It's one-way love. 2 Timothy tells us that even when we're faithless, he remains faithful, that you are a child of God, you belong before his throne, and when you're in front of his throne, you receive mercy and grace, because all of his rejection and wrath and judgment was poured out on Jesus, and there's none left for you. All you get is his approval and acceptance because you're in his son. You gave Jesus your sin, and Jesus gave you his righteousness and approval. And and God cares about your situation more than anyone else. And he's the one who can actually bring the hope and healing. You can't conjure it up yourself. Yes, there are some steps you can do to get safe and be safe, but you can't conjure your own hope and healing. He can bring the ultimate hope and healing, and he will. And the proof of that is that his son rose from the dead. Because of the resurrection, we know that the final word on us is life and acceptance, not condemnation and death.
Amen. I don't think we have time for the last call, but maybe you could just say a quick word. Marilyn asked, how can I help a friend in an abusive relationship? Is there one thing you'd say, or maybe two things?
Yes. Call, ask her if you can work together and talk to a minister, if she'd be willing to do that, if she's a Christian, or if that's something that would be appealing to her, and talking to a domestic violence advocate, and get them making a safety plan. The first step, and if they're in an abusive relationship, the first step is not getting marriage counseling, because in an abusive relationship, the person who's being harmed against will not feel safe to talk. And so it might require calling the police. I don't know what the situation is like. If it's not a threat or threat of physical violence or physical violence, emotional, psychological, other types of abuse, getting distance from them, alleviating some of the expectation to, you know, stick it out and stay with, and let them know just the reality that it probably will not get better. It'll probably escalate, and plan for it escalating, plan for how to get her safe. And I think maybe, you know, getting her a copy of the book so she can just look through it and see if there's some helpful nuggets in there for that apply directly to her friend's situation.
And again, as we said earlier in the program, if you missed it, those two statements that mean as much as anything, I'm worried about your safety and I believe you. So you can make those part of your conversation as well. Justin Holcomb, my guest today. He teaches theology at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and Reformed Theological Seminary. He's an ordained clergyman. He's authored several books. The one we're referencing, he and his wife Lindsay have written called Is It My Fault? Hope and Healing for Those Suffering Domestic Violence. And mentioned that there's some resources out on what Moody Publishing has made some available. And you talked about the safety plans. You just Google that, right? You can find some things.
Making a safety plan, and I also it will likely be on the web page for the interview.
Sure.
And if you go to justinholcomb.com, it's right there on the front page. Making a safety plan, it'll be hard to miss. It's all over the place.
Good. Well, other resources available there. I encourage you, as we've heard the conversation today, that if you are in a situation, that you make a plan and find a friend and let your church be your support group to find hope and healing in the midst of domestic violence. Justin Holcomb joining us today. Justin, as always, I really appreciate your time and visit today.
Thanks for the opportunity, and I appreciate being here as well. Thank you.
You can connect on the podcast at myfaithradio.com.